Okay, here we roll. We are back to the forward. Paper zero, section two, old single column, page three. All right, so before we actually launch section two here tonight, let's do a little more with that list of seven bullet points that we ended up with in the previous section last time. So remember what we did there. We recognized that the relators were basically giving us the musings of Charles Hartshorne and gently suggesting that we take his musings in Flatland, you know, that horizontal picture of reality that he was trying to somehow play with, you know, where he's basically trying to break himself out of the dichotomy and doesn't really succeed of perfect imperfect. And they wanted us to do what they always want us to do. They want us to get ourselves out of that flatland or any other flatland that you might find yourself in. And basically that's where everyone is on the planet. They're in this very limited perspective of reality. They want you to take that horizontal perspective and lift it up into a vertical perspective. Get yourself to see yourself existing or whatever thing you're thinking about, get yourself to see it in the vertical context of reality. And so that's what we did with those seven bullet points. We turned them into Flatlander, into a vertical cosmic picture. And I mentioned, once you have them transformed, you can take them forward and think about, they're telling me about this certain type of being or this expression of personalized deity, expression of God. What kind of divinity am I dealing with there? Let's just do a quick little exercise going through those in a way that's going to be quite relevant to us to see what I'm talking about. So right there at the end of section one, let's just go one at a time down that list. So the first one, we've transformed it into absolute divinity in all aspects. Okay, so what would fit that? Well, obviously the Father would be a good example of a fact that is absolute divinity in all aspects. Well, so if the Father is absolute divinity in all aspects, if I think about a fragment of the Father, and I think about it in that initial state, if I think about a virgin adjuster, a thought adjuster in that initial prior to any experiential acquirement state, a virgin adjuster, fragment of the Father, that existential fragment of the Father is going to have absolute divinity in all aspects. So that would be a virgin adjuster would fit number one there. Okay, well, let's go to number two. So you have absolute divinity in some phases and absonite divinity in all other aspects. And that's how, remember the fundamental thing that's really transforming it from the horizontal to the vertical is picking up on, oh yeah, he told me to think about this hierarchical vertical structure of finite, absolute, absolute. You know, right before he introduced this, that's what he fundamentally wanted us to do. So now we have, you know, absolute divinity in some phases and absonite divinity in all other aspects. Well, that virgin adjuster goes out and begins to acquire an experiential nature. As it goes from a virgin adjuster to an advanced adjuster to a supreme adjuster. Okay, that experiential acquirement, you know, literally is augmenting the nature of that adjuster. You can think of that experiential acquirement as wrapping around that existential core. And of course, this is an adjuster we're talking about. So, you know, it's everything it adds on is divine, right from the start. So what is it? What kind of divinity is being wrapped around that absolute divinity core? It's absonite divinity. That adjuster is starting at the top and penetrating downward. You know, what's immediately below the absolute? The absonite. That's what it's going to be acquiring, is absonite divinity. That's what it's going to be wrapping around. So an experienced adjuster, you know, in various degrees, is going to be number two. It's going to have that absolute divinity core and an absonite divinity wrapped around it. And before we go to number three, you know, so again, remind yourself, you know, when we were thinking about the, you know, these seven cosmic levels, and we were, you know, beginning to understand exactly how the psychic circles, you know, relate to the sevenfold and those seven levels. Remember what we, you know, what was finally obvious once we laid it out like this. You know, the adjuster starts out as a fragment of the infinite upholder. Starts out right there on the top. That's one of the aspects of the Father, the infinite upholder. That's a reservoir. It's because it has infinite for an adjective. That's one of the Father's reservoirs. He dips a ladle into that, takes out a measure of it, you know, separates it, individuates it. That's an adjuster. Okay, it starts out at the top, and an adjuster in and of itself can only penetrate down to what we call, you know, as we're growing, the third circle level, this fourth cosmic level. That is the supreme level. Okay, it's coming down from above, penetrating down, you know, and as it gets to be fully experienced, it's called a supreme adjuster, because it's penetrated, you know, in full fashion all the way down to that supreme level. Okay, and that's as far, it's coming top down, that's as far as it can penetrate in and of itself. So before you have the spirit of truth to bridge the gap, you have to get yourself up to that level in order to, you know, to be able to receive an adjuster. You know, there's no sense in an adjuster coming when it can't reach you. You know, so, you know, it's coming down to that supreme level. Okay, so that's, you know, even when it gets all the way to that supreme state, it's still just number two. Absolute divinity core, absonite divinity acquirement wrapped around it, experiential acquirement. Okay, number three, absolute, absonite, and finite, you know, divinity in varied association. What's an example of that? Well, think of yourself as a finaliter. So you've been coming up through the local universe, through the super universe. You arrive on the pilot world of Pavona with the first minimum thread of perfection. You have perfection of purpose. So that first little measure of finite divinity is in place. But, you know, it's just perfection of purpose. In other words, now you can actually think about acquiring finite divinity. You know, that perfection of purpose, that's related to the Father, the initiator. That's at the point that you're really initiating the acquirement of finite divinity. You've been building up to that point until then. So you journey all the way through Avona and on to the Isle of Paradise, and you've done it. You are now finitely perfect, even as the Father is absolutely perfect. You have your full measure of finite divinity. Okay? But you know, you fuse with the adjuster, you know, forever long ago. So there you are. You have this, you know, there's this combined finite divinity that you've acquired, fused to an adjuster that has absolute and absonite divinity. You've got all three in a particular association. Okay, so you as a finaliter is number three. And the significance of you finally completing the finite process there, having finite divinity, that means you can access that first little measure of the minimum absonite divinity that adjuster has acquired. That's why you can be a Trinitizer. And that's what gives you that whole new potential that you have as a finaliter. You know, in order to do something, you know, that begins to transcend creature, you're going to have to somehow be literally transcending what you are as a finite creature. And that's how you're doing it. You finally have gotten yourself up to where you can grab a hold of that lowest aspect of absonite divinity that adjuster has, and you're really functioning completely together as one in that domain, and you're functioning as a Trinitizer, and can engage the absonite character of Havona natives, and the two of you together can create creature Trinitized sons. You know, you're engaging absonite to absonite. But see, that absonite is not what you've acquired just as a self. The adjuster acquired it, and now you've acquired the prerequisite to engage that. And of course, it's going to take you the rest of eternity to get synced up with all of that rest of that absonite divinity, all the way up to the absolute divinity of the adjuster. But as a finaliter, you've grabbed a hold of that first part. Okay, so a finaliter is an example of number three. On page three, just right above at the end of section one. Yeah, you know, and I'm just rewording each of those, see, into their truth mode, their vertical mode. Okay, so number four. Now this one is absolute divinity in some respects, finite in all others. You know, again, just reminding yourself of how transformative it is to say it in a vertical mode rather than that flatlander mode. Okay.
Why are you equating imperfection with finite?
Well, I'm not immediately. That's, you know, go back and listen to that. I mean, the step is, he gives you the first thing. He says, instead of doing perfect, think of complete. So that it's, instead of perfect, imperfect, it's complete, incomplete. Okay. And then take the next step to absolute and finite. Okay. Okay. So what's an example of something that's absolute divinity in some respects, finite in all others? An example of that's a creator son. Okay, a creator son, you know, is the direct offspring of the Father and the Son. You know, those absolute beings, okay? And so there is a spark of absolute divinity at the core of a creator son, because they're, you know, directly spawned by that absolute divinity, okay? But they are a finite being. You know, they go out to function as a finite being, you know, and they have a priori finite divinity. You know, they go out with, you know, their measure. You know, each one of the creator sons has a different measure, their measure of finite divinity, with a spark of absolute divinity at his core. Okay? And like we were pointing out last week, what does that creator son do? That creator son, you know, begins this process as a descending son, working his way down through the seven bestowals. But as he's working his way down through the seven bestowals, he's taking that initial finite divinity that he began with, and he's elevating it. Each step he goes down, that finite divinity goes up a notch. Until when he's completed those seven bestowals, he's raised that finite divinity all the way up to supremacy. At that point, now he has that first measure of that minimum absonite divinity. So once he's a master son, he goes from number four to number three. Now he has all three of them too, just like we do as a finaliter. We have varied associations, like they say there. Just think about what you've got there. I mean, the master son has just grabbed a hold of the first measure of minimum absonite. You've done the same thing too, but the adjuster already has all of this absonite divinity above that. Okay. The ratios of these three divinities, aspects are different between the two of us, but each of us has all three.
Yeah. So that's why in the eternal future, we can work together.
Right. You can see right away. Once he's a master son and we're a finaliter, we're already a complementary pair. And we're going to start, each of us is a reciprocal, is needed reciprocally by the other. And we talked about that some. So there's an example of number four, creator son. How about number five? Absolute divinity in no direction, absonite divinity in all manifestations. Well, we mentioned a great example last week. Remember, we were talking about the Trinity Ultimate. You've got the three different groups in the Trinity Ultimate. One of those, the third group, is the Architects of the Master Universe. The Architects of the Master Universe, their deity is called the absonite capacity, the type of deity that they're made out of. Okay, literally, they're absonite type deity. Okay, so what kind of divinity do they have? Absonite divinity, and that's all they have. They're made with absonite divinity. So they're an example of number five. They don't have absolute or finite, they just have absonite divinity. The Architects of the Master Universe. Okay, and did you notice something? We've got Master Sons, we've got the Architects of the Master Universe. Think about number six. What's an example of number six? Absolute divinity in no phase, absonite in some, finite in others. Example of that is God the Supreme. We started talking about that last week. Again, remember, you have the supreme level, and it has two sides to it. An upward face and a downward face to that supreme level. Start with the unity viewpoint, top-down view here. God the Supreme is there on that upper face, that minimum absonite aspect. Okay, so that's absonite divinity, in some. Okay, now what does the other side of God the Supreme look like? He's this single fact, God the Supreme, when you look at it from the top, and has absonite divinity. But, if you think about that absonite divinity penetrating through to the other face, where it has to engage the finite, where it has to be the total finite level, or the level of the total finite, God the Supreme, it becomes two. There's two faces now instead of one. One is God the Supreme as God the Mother, and the other is God the Supreme as God the Almighty. There's these two faces now on the finite side. Okay? that's finite divinity. God the Supreme, functioning as God the Mother or as God the Almighty. God the Mother and God the Almighty have finite deity. Now, it's finite at the total finite level. It's the highest, but it is finite deity. See, so that's an example of absonite in some, finite in others. Okay? Or if you look at it from the bottom up and from the individuality viewpoint, in other words, you have the Universal Mother and the Almighty Supreme with the full measure of finite deity, or divinity, I mean, finite divinity. And then there's the Supreme Being on the other side of the supreme level with absonite divinity. Finite, absonite. But they're all together as one. Okay, it's just one face is turned toward the absonite and the other two faces are turned towards the finite. Okay, so that gives you, a kind of a look at all three groups in that first experiential trinity. How one, we didn't talk about all of the supreme creators, but at least in the case of the Master Sons, they start out with absolute and finite, and then they acquire some absonite that allows them to be in that Trinity. Then you've got the Supreme Being that is, has this absonite expression of the total finite. And then you have the architects of the Master Universe that are just absonite to begin with. And so they're all relating in their common absoniteness, even though two of them have other things in play besides absonite. But they're relating in the absonite way in that Trinity. Okay. Now the last one. Absolute divinity in no attribute, finite in all. Well, kind of a fun example of that. Remember when we went through the planetary government, the seraphic planetary government? Remember how you had the master seraphim? You have those seven groups of master seraphim, seven groups of seraphim of completion that break the planetary government into these 12 divisions, 12 basic divisions. Those seraphim of completion, just the name should remind you. You can go back and read about the core of seraphic completion. Those are seraphim that are now have finite divinity. They're finitely perfect, but that's all they have. They don't have an. They're not the ones that go into the finality cores. They don't get a father fragment so they can have all this other stuff. All they have is they're a finite creature that has been perfected. They have finite divinity. So they're a good example, number seven. See, so that's what I'm talking about. See, that's now we're actually using this list. We've turned it into something that can be used. And it can help us to understand a lot of the stuff going on in the book. That's a long journey from where Charles Hartshorne, generated those back in 1941 by just turning a mechanical crank and, writing out the seven different combinations of three things. And that's what the Divine Counselor wants you to do. He wants you to take human thinking and set it into motion. Figure out how truth flows through it, if at all. Maybe nothing flows through it, and then move on to something else. But if you can figure out how truth flows through that, now you can start to do something with it. You can use it to begin to understand how the universe works. Okay? All right, who'd like to read section 2 here? All right.
Part 2.
Section 2.
Section 2.
Yep.
God. Evolving mortal creatures experience an irresistible urge to symbolize their finite concepts of God. Man's consciousness of moral duty and his spiritual idealism represent a value level, an experiential reality, which is difficult of symbolization. Cosmic consciousness implies the recognition of a first cause, the one and only uncaused reality.
Okay, let's just stop right there. Okay, so let's think about how he's starting us here. Remember when we were going through section one, and we notice, well, wait a minute, why did he start with deity? Why didn't he start with God? He knows you're thinking that. And so put yourself in his mind and think about what he's saying to himself as he writes this. He's saying, oh, so you want to talk about God, huh? Be careful what you ask for. Okay? And so, you know, he first points out, okay, you humans, you have this irresistible urge to symbolize your finite concepts of God. And of course, sort of in between the lines is, you know what limited, subjective, anthropomorphic notions of God you've been symbolizing all throughout history. Okay, I'm not going there. So if you want to talk about God, buckle up. okay? Because look at what the first thing he does. In those few little words, he starts out and he says, okay, well, the first thing you've got to do is you got to get beyond a subjective consciousness. Okay? You need to start tapping into the foundation of cosmic consciousness. You need to begin to take delight in cultivating your relationship with the three cosmic intuitions. So in that first little paragraph, he points to the consciousness of moral duty. Okay, which cosmic intuition gives you that?
Second.
And, you know, spiritual idealism.
Third.
Okay, so there's second and third cosmic intuitions. But then notice what he said. If it was just that, it's like, well, okay, maybe I can handle that. I've kind of thought about morality and spirit things some. At least I think I have. Well, he says, that's difficult of symbolization. You know, what you're going to get just directly with your moral discrimination and your spiritual insight. Okay, you need the first cosmic intuition. See, so he immediately sets two and three aside in that first little paragraph, and then that first sentence, he says, cosmic consciousness implies the recognition of a first cause, the one and only uncaused reality, okay? Your ability to recognize the notion of causality, to even have that thought in your head, is because of the first cosmic intuition. You know, that's the recognition mechanism. Your logical acumen, you know, allows you to recognize the difference between fact and figment, recognize causality. Okay? And, you know, and put it in this cosmic context, you know, of a, you know, taking it all the way to a first cause. Okay? But see, that's what he's saying. He's saying, if you want to really do this seriously, okay, you can't just have rationalization schemes. You're going to need to turn on your first cosmic intuition, your logical acumen. You're going to need to start to recognize what I'm about to say to you. And if you can begin to recognize it with that logical, objective perspective, you could then begin to think about symbolizing the facts of God. See, that's your ability to recognize the facts of God, not just the morality of God, you know, or this spiritual quality of God, but the fact of God that can be symbolized. Yeah. All right, Jason, you had a question?
Well, I don't think they were ignoring the first cosmic intuition. I think they were trying to throw out the first misconception of dichotomy.
Well, no, they're not ignoring it. He's just notice how he's putting all three out, but he doesn't do them one, two, three. He goes two, three, and then he says, let's set that aside. One, you know, let's start with one. And see, and that begins the discussion of God. He begins the discussion of God with challenging you to invoke the first cosmic intuition. Those three cosmic intuitions form three levels of experience. What are those three levels called? The fourth, fifth, and sixth levels of meaning. You can experience up on those three objective levels. Okay, but he's saying the experiences you have on the fifth and sixth levels of meaning with your second and third cosmic intuitions, that's not easy to symbolize. That's, you know, a pretty just direct, intuitive, sort of abstract possession. You know, it's harder to get your grip on that. You can feel it definitively. You know, you get a solid grip on the sixth level of meaning on that spiritual level, and that'll produce powerful feelings, but that's not, your feelings are not easy to symbolize. Okay? You need something really rock solid, factual, to be able to express in analogies, symbologies, you know, whatnot. See, you need that first cosmic intuition. Okay, so what does he do then? So now that he's told us what we have to do as a prerequisite before we talk about God, what does he say?
God, the universal Father, functions on three deity personality levels of sub-infinite value and relative divinity expression. One, pre-personal. As in the ministry of the Father fragments, such as the thought adjusters. Two, personal, as in the evolutionary experience of created and procreated beings. Three, superpersonal, as in the eventuated existences of certain absonite and associated beings.
Okay. So let me put you in the context. What's he putting out here? What he's beginning to try to get us to think about is when we use the word personality, there's two basic modes in which you can use that word personality. You can, when he says, functions on three deity personality levels, or, you know, the next thing that we're going to read when he talks about, you know, God is personalized deity. In both cases, you're using the word personality in a generalized sense. Okay. Now, a lot of times, though, we use the word personality in a specific sense, as in item number two here. Okay, where we're talking, they're trying to bring it right to you. They're bringing it to the finite domain and challenging you to begin to understand a term they're going to use, personality, initially from your finite perspective. And in the finite domain, like we've pointed out many times, you have this fundamental threefold actuality. And in that threefold actuality, there are two substances, matter and spirit. There are two substances. And those two substances can be purposed. They can have pattern imposed upon them. Okay? Energy pattern is normally just called pattern in the book. Spirit pattern is called personality. Okay? So here we're talking about, okay, personal, as in the evolutionary existences of created, you know, like a creator son, and procreated beings like you and I, or you and me. God, I'm terrible about that. So talking about your personality is personality in the specific sense. But he's saying, well, if you think about generalizing that into a bigger picture, we can use words like pre-personal and super-personal to begin to transition you into an understanding of the bigger picture. Okay, so number one there, when you're talking about a father fragment, for instance, okay, or just talking about the father exists prior to the separation into spirit and energy, prior to the eternal sun and the paradise isle. Okay, the domain of the father, or the substance of the father that, for instance, gets fragmented as an adjuster, is a substance that's prior to the differentiation into spirit and energy. So it's prior to any meaning to energy pattern, spirit pattern, like we were just talking about. Okay. And we've talked about this, you know, when you begin to understand this, you know, the pure spirit of a thought adjuster, if you take all the father fragments And we always talk about the thought adjusters as pure spirit, but technically, if you take all the father fragments and you're looking at this them as pure spirit, if you take all those father fragments and turn them around, they're the force charge of space, pure energy. Those two things are one and the same thing. It's kind of like the Supreme, you know, where it has two sides, you know, total finite on this side and minimum absolute on this side. It's the same thing here. See, so there is no actual separation between the energy and the spirit. They're one. They're together. There's no distance between them. You can think of them as having two sides, but no separation.
On paradise, there's no separation.
Right. It's, well, or even out here. I mean, right now, your adjuster is both pure energy and pure spirit. You're only tapping into it initially as a pure spirit phenomenon. Okay? And that's why... Okay, so if we use the word personality as spirit pattern, and you're tapping into this father fragment, really, you know, just in the pure spirit way, if you talk about, you could talk about it as being pre-personal then. You know, you could use the word personal with it, so the spirit side, but it's not a personality, but it's eventually going to be your body that you're going to purpose. You know, that spirit substance is going to be purposed by you. You're going to personalize it with your purposing, your personality. So you call it pre-personal. But see, in a bigger sense, it's to understand when you talk about the father fragments or the force charge of space, primordial force, those together are the father's personal ministry. Neither is, you know, as a person, but they are a personal ministry, but it's personal in this pre-personal or, you know, sort of sense. See? Okay. Now, so if you have the, definitively you have energy and spirit separated is one thing, and then you have it before they're separated is another thing, you could have it blended together, you know, absonite. That's when you're talking about super-personal. So again, from our finite perspective, if I think about taking energy and spirit and not weaving them together, like in Morantia substance, but blending them together in an absonite way, from my finite perspective, it's like, well, there was some spirit there when I talk about personality on that spirit substance and I blend it in, you know, can I still kind of talk about that as having personality attached to it? Maybe I just need to put a prefix on it to distinguish it. Yeah, let's call it super personal, okay? You know, what the patterning, the purposing of that sort of substance. Now, technically, if you want to give a name to that, instead of energy pattern and spirit pattern, it's absinthe pattern. If those of you who have looked at my triune pattern paper, when I talk about those other eight triunities that they don't talk about directly, the absinthe triunities, I numbered number 15, you know, the final of the 15 triunities as the triunity of absinthe personality. That's the triunity that's associated with the bestowal of this kind of purposing that grabs a hold of a blend of energy and spirit, or what from a finite viewpoint you might call super personal.
Chris, yeah. Didn't you say that your adjuster and you are a perfect match? Right? Isn't that the argument?
Not in an originating sense. Remember, you know, in all version adjusters identical. So it's not like, when adjusters are first individuated, that they're somehow, they match up. Because after all, in order for it to become a supreme adjuster, it's had to go through many individuals, not only that couldn't fuse with an adjuster because they're spirit fusers, say, for instance, but it actually has to have been rejected by an individual that could have fused with it. And, you know, that their mortal individual had to choose iniquity in order to get to be from advanced to a supreme adjuster. That individual could have fused with that adjuster, but chose not to, you know, and then eventually you fuse with it. See, so again, adjusters are not a keyed just to a given individual. And think about why that's possible. I mean, they're starting out from an absolute viewpoint. An absolute viewpoint can engage any finite thing. Yeah, they're not starting out individuated in the finite, where they would have to be a one-on-one match to start with. They're a one-to-all match to start with, starting at the absolute. Yeah. Is there another question? Okay. You got one, yeah.
Okay, the Virgin Adjuster has no experience at all.
Right.
He's just like pure spirit.
From right, it's just this existential fragment.
That we probably have our experience.
Yes.
So every if the individual that they had and didn't survive,
mm-hmm.
then the part of that adjuster that he had experience that was maybe iniquitous or something, that doesn't even enter into the picture. That just goes someplace into
because that's the absence of something. The iniquity is the absence of something, so it's not something the adjuster could possess. The adjuster can only possess a something. Iniquity is the absence of divinity. It's the absence of something.
Doesn't have that memory.
All the adjuster has from that. Well, no, the adjuster has memory, but. But what the adjuster acquired in that relationship, I mean, that mortal, say, that chose iniquity, they weren't born iniquitous. They may have had a long life with a lot of value in it. And the adjuster acquired a reflection of that value. But at some point, the value started drying up in the individual until it totally went black. You know, and at that point, there's nothing more for the adjuster to have a reflection of, but it has a reflection of all of the value that was there up until there ceased to be value. Yeah, so it sees what was real in that individual, and you know what kind of, I mean, I have no idea. You know, what sort of memories. Relative to the iniquity that has and how you might eventually have access. I don't know how to think about that. That's kind of hard to contemplate. But yes, you definitely eventually will have access to what that adjuster acquired from all of these individuals. Whether or not they were just temporarily, on loan to the individual because the person was a spirit fuser, or the person chose iniquity. Yeah. Whatever, anything of survival value is not lost. Even if it doesn't stay with that individual because they chose not to hold on to it, the adjuster continues to hold on to anything of survival value. Not only the adjuster, but remember there's a reflection of whatever of survival value that person let go of also gets reflected into the Almighty Supreme too.
So does he keep everything of value from that other person that didn't survive for some reason or another?
Mm-hmm.
He keeps that with him, and so when we fuse with him, we have it too.
Well, I mean, you don't immediately get access to everything. I mean, they tell you this is a slow, gradual process. You fuse, and you're going to get some initial things as you go through the local universe. By the time you become a first stage spirit, you're going to have access to a lot of that, a lot more of that. How much, I can't say. But it's a progressive phenomenon of penetrating more deeply into the adjuster and hence having access to more and more of what the adjuster possesses. and you're obviously going to penetrate the finite stuff first. So that's what's going on there. They're just, he's wanting you to start to think in this bigger context, using personality as an initial way to kind of think about, again, about the finite, absolute, and absolute. See, if you think about it, again, it's playing with this vertical picture and how you can use personality in a generalized sense to kind of think about all three domains and in a specific sense to think about you. Yeah.
So what about telling someone a divine friend walks with you?
You want to give people the good news that you have an immediate goal of great worth. It's a pearl of great price. If you think that, even if you believe in God, but you think, well, in God, but it's some infinite being and it's going to, it's going to be some kind of a long journey. I have no idea what it is. It's going to be forever. To tell them that, no, God has reached down and is right there in front of your eyeball. Okay, you just haven't noticed it yet. His fingertip is right there in front of your eye. Open your eye and see it. And notice that to get the process started in a very significant way is a short journey. All you have to do is that. Reach around and grasp it. Okay? The distance that your fingers have to travel, to go in a circle. That's your initial journey. And you've touched the end from the beginning once you have.
So you don't even have to get into this thing about Jesus. And it advocates the religious life of Jesus.
Religious life of Jesus and how he lived it,
right.
to know what to do once you've grasped this fact and have begun the journey in reality. It would be wonderful if he had some example that models a religious life and how to live it.
Yeah.
Not a God doing it, but a true man doing it. And the thing about, just one little thing about your thought there at the beginning about the personal and impersonal, bringing them together. How did he start? He said, if you're going to do this, think about God. You don't start with spiritual consciousness and you don't start with material consciousness. The first two words of that paragraph are cosmic consciousness. You start by weaving your spiritual and your material consciousness together, because even your logical acumen is cosmic consciousness. It's material and spiritual consciousness woven together. If for no other reason, just when I say logical, that sounds like it might have something to do with material things. And he says it's one of the three cosmic intuitions in the Holy Spirit. Well, the word spirit sounds like spiritual. They must be woven together. I should try to understand how it is. That those three cosmic intuitions are the personal and the impersonal, if you will, together as one. That's how you can begin to actually see the real God. You need both eyes open.
What's the impersonal and personal of the cosmic intuition?
Material consciousness and spiritual consciousness.
Material is impersonal?
Personal. Personality is what kind of pattern?
Spirit.
Spirit pattern, okay. Not matter pattern.
So spirit is personal,
yeah.
And matter is impersonal.
Right.
Can you explain that? I'm still not clear on the superpersonal.
So
absonite.
Right.
What exactly would just, an absonite be?
Just think about, we can talk about a million things about absinthe, but just start with the simple notion that if I think about my Marantia substance or my soul as a weave, where I have material fibers and spiritual fibers. They're separate. I can point to the material energy fibers and I can point to the spirit energy fibers. They're separate still. They're woven together and in harmony, but they're separate. That's a finite substance. But if those two energies are blended together, which seems kind of magical from a finite perspective, that's like oil and water suddenly not liking each other instead of rejecting each other and just becoming one, if that material energy and that spiritual energy melt together into one substance, that's an absinthe substance. See, it's transcended the separateness between matter and spirit. When we talk about the finite, you got to remember it's never totally divorced from the absinthe. A seraphim is a measure, his body, the body of a seraphim, is not pure spirit energy. The body of a seraphim is some measure of material energy and some measure of spiritual energy melted together, blended together as one energy system. Their body is absinthe. Their foundation is absinthe. Even this stuff here, okay, I'm touching it at the molecular level. Below the molecular level is the atomic level. And below the atomic level is the level of electrons and protons and stuff. Okay? And below that is it starts to cease to be so definitively finite, and it starts to be kind of curious from a finite viewpoint. Why does it start to get curious? Because as you're moving towards automatons, it's becoming more and more of an absonite. There actually is an absonite character to this, you know, couch arm here. It's just I can't touch it. It's the foundation underneath this finiteness. Everything in the finite is the part of the iceberg that sticks above the water. What we call the finite is the part above the water. It isn't floating. There's a part that's below the water. That's the absonite part that you don't see. Now, if you could put on scuba gear, you know, and drop below the finite water level and see the absonite, then you could see it. You know, absonite scuba gear. Okay. But you know, you and I don't have that yet. Okay? All right. But it's there. It's always there. I mean, you know, and what's underneath that absonite part? There's an absolute foundation. At the foundation of everything is the Isle of Paradise. Everything is built on the Isle of Paradise. Everything is built upon the, you know, that absolute matter of the Isle. You know, and so you can think of this as being a downstepped expression of the Isle. It's downstepped from the absonite, or from the absolute through the absonite down to this finite thing that I'm touching. That's the tip of that downstepped expression of the Isle that I'm touching.
Is that absonite? Is that like recycle it? You know.
Well, I mean, that's one of the ways that when finite things kind of get locked, you have the secondary dissociators. You remember those master physical controllers? You know, they can unravel the finiteness, kind of get it back down to an absonite soup that then can be re-expressed in a finite way. Yeah. They're recycling it through the absonite. Yeah, that's kind of a good way to think about it. Okay, so let's read some more here.
God is a word symbol designating all personalizations of deity. The term requires a different definition on each personal level of deity function and must be still further redefined within each of these levels, as this term may be used to designate the diverse coordinate and subordinate personalizations of deity. For example, the Paradise Creator Sons, the local universe fathers.
Okay, so let's think about that specifically. So they now have defined the word God. God is personalized deity. So if you're going to understand a given expression of God, you know, the unity which is God, like a creator son, the first thing you have to understand is what kind of deity is there. Like I said, I mean, a creator son is the direct offspring of the Father and the Son. Those two types of deity, the Father takes a little measure of his type of deity, the Father type deity, and the Son takes a little measure of his type of deity, the Son type deity, and the two fuse it together into one, you know, the Father-Son type, new type of deity, okay? The Father and the Son together, deity together is one expression of deity. That's the type of deity that a creator son is, and then that's personalized. It's personalized deity. It's God. Creator son is God. Okay. You know, and just like I said, if you take an architect of the master universe, you have a type of deity called absonite capacity. It's a very abstract thing from our initial perspective, but it's another type of deity. You take a measure of it, you know, so here it is, and then you personalize it, or sort of super personalize it, you know, and then you have an architect, one of the architects of the master universe. They're God. They have to be God because they're part of, you know, the Trinity there. Now, in a higher sense, in a general sense of personalized, not in a finite sense, as I said, sort of super personalized, see, if you want to be specific about it. But, that's where you're really now beginning to break away from anything that humans have ever thought. Now we have deity and God as separate things, and we can start to understand a better definition of the word God than just some fuzzy anthropomorphic word. Okay, We've got deity. It's a literal thing. It's sort of, you know, it's the type of self they have, you know, the type of substance that their beingness is made out of, and then that's, and personality is bestowed upon that. That deity is purposed. Okay. As a creator with creator personality. Remember, there is that distinction, creature personality and creator personality. God is getting creator personality. You and I are getting creature personality. Okay, what's next?
The term God, as we make use of it, may be understood by designation as God the Father.
Okay, stop there. Okay, so these two little things. Okay, the first one, they say they'll be very specific. Like they'll say God the Father. Okay, what does that mean specifically? Okay, let's get out the infinite eternal ellipse here. Okay. The Father type deity is a bit of a complex facet of deity. Remember how I introduced the infinite eternal ellipse last week, I pointed out that this second to the from the center circuit here around the ellipse, that's the circuit of the Father. There's several different facets of deity. There's the first center, the first source, the universal Father. They're not as an individuality, but as a facet of deity. The universal Father, the universal Creator, the universal Controller, and the infinite Upholder. All those facets together as one, you know, together in this circuit, that type of deity all together is called the Father. The Father type deity wraps all the way around the circuit. So if I take that, all that deity together as one and personalize it, I have God, the Father. The Father is the name of the deity. When you're talking about the personalization of that deity, that's God, the Father, or God, the whatever. We're going to talk about a bunch of the other ones here in a minute. Okay, and so when you're talking in that mode, see, when you express it like that, where you literally put down the deity name and then you stick God in front of it to indicate the personalization of that deity, the fundamental quality of deity is unity. Remember when they told us that right up front when they defined deity? They said, well, the fundamental quality is unity. So when you have an expression like that, like God the Father, that's a unity viewpoint expression. It's fundamentally wanting you to think about the deity, the unity. Now, so you're taking a top-down, a unity viewpoint. They want you to think about God here in the unity viewpoint, that, you know, that more deity-like viewpoint, not the individuality, the bottom-up viewpoint. Okay? And just one little thing.
And we're able to do that because we have a thought adjuster.
The thought adjuster, see, is really going to help you with this, because we talked about that. That adjuster is coming down. It fundamentally is this downward viewpoint. The more you can allow it to help you with that, the more it's like, okay, that makes sense. It's not abstract at all. I think I can think about that very literally. That's the unity viewpoint. Adjuster's helping you with that. Remember how last week when I brought this up, you know, David and me says, wait a minute, you got infinite upholder in a bunch of spots. Let's just mention one of them here. When we went through total deity, you know, we talked about these, you know, the universal one of infinity and the infinite one and these various facets. And so you get around here to the infinite upholder, and then notice I have it again, you know, to get me the rest of the way around. Why? You know, the universal Father is the God of all creation, the first source and center of all things and beings. First think of him as a creator, then as a controller, and lastly as an infinite upholder. Okay, those first two sentences of paper one. The universal Father is God of all creation, the first source and center of all things of beings. First think of him as a creator, then as a controller, and lastly as an infinite upholder. Okay, that's six of those boxes, see, right there in those two sentences. Okay, and it says lastly as an infinite upholder. Okay, but look at what you have here. You have the infinite upholder, see, reaches all the way around until it contacts the infinite capacity. The infinite capacity, when we went through total deity, you know, as a facet of the sevenfold deity, the I Am, the infinite capacity is I Am, that which extends. Extends. It extends the infinite upholder to the fullness of the infinite capacity. You see, it extends it through there, because I am that which extends that. That's what type of deity that is, that infinite capacity. And you may have noticed something there. I said, the infinite capacity extends the infinite upholder to the fullness of the infinite capacity. It's like, well, isn't that like self-referential? Oh, yeah. We just read that back here when we went through the seven functional levels of total deity. The label they gave for the infinite capacity was self-projected deity. See, no one had to project. It's self-projected. So the infinite capacity can extend it to the fullness of itself. It's self-projected deity. If you just carefully think about, see, the specific terms that these things are called, it gives you the explanation. That's what extends it around. That which extends, extends it around. Okay? So that, just think of that whole circuit as the Father. The personalization of that is God the Father. Okay, so now do that next one.
By context, as when used in the discussion of some one deity level or association, when in doubt as to the exact interpretation of the word God, it would be advisable to refer it to the person of the universal Father.
Okay, so first thing, just the flavor of that last statement. Notice what the divine counselor said. He knows that even without all of the complexity that I've sort of added in as we're going through here, just if you were reading this on your own, your head is already probably starting to swim. Okay, well, it's like, wow, this is getting complicated already. And he's saying, remember, we've designed this revelation to be as evolutional as possible. If initially you can't quite figure out what all this stuff means, start saying, well, let's think of it as the Universal Father. I think I understand the Universal Father. Let me just initially call as much as I can understand that. And as I can understand more, I'll go, oh, well, actually, that's not the Universal Father. That's the Eternal Son. You know, you start to separate it out as you begin to be able to get it clarified in your head. See, so notice how he's suggesting, you know, take it as slowly as you need to, and always use the Universal Father as a fallback position. When all is said and done, you know, the Father idea is still the highest human concept of God. You know, it's a good fallback position because the Universal Father is the initiator. If you fall back on the Father will help you initiate a better understanding. He can help you with that. So there's that. But then also just notice, you know, he didn't say God the Father. He said the Universal Father. He purposely put the unity viewpoint in the first one and the individuality viewpoint in the second one. And the reason that almost always when you're going to talk about God the Father from the individuality viewpoint, that you say Universal Father, you know, like for instance, you know, here's the Universal Father at the top of God the Sevenfold here. You know, we're always, you know, using Universal Father. And it's not just because we're going to the fallback position. I mean, what's the actual reason? If you think about this whole circuit of the Father, and you can go back to the functional levels of total deity and look at the labels attached to these various facets, the Universal Father, that facet of deity, is self-personalized deity. That facet, out of, you know, relative to all the other facets around the Father's circuit, that facet is that primal grip point, if you will, of what we can understand as personality. And it's self-personalized, but you know, despite that little complexity, that's the personality point. You know, if I engage God the Father as a person, you know, I'm not engaging the infinite upholder, you know, or the first source. Okay, the point I'm contacting first is the Universal Father facet. And so calling that facet of deity, using that same name for an individuality name, see, is a good thing. So they use it for both. When you're reading deity and reality, you know, they use it like this as a facet of deity name, because this is, see, you know, the total deity, not total God. This is total deity. But we also just use it for an individuality name, like he just did there, because it's the personality, you know, focus point. Yeah.
You were saying when we contact it, I just love that the sun is right there,
mm-hmm.
in between him, mm-hmm. and us.
Mm-hmm.
Through.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool.
Because, you know, the Father may be the volitional absolute. That we, you know, when we exercise our will, so that we're volitional, you know, the first thing we hit, if we go all the way up to the absolute, is a volitional absolute. But right next to him is the personality absolute, the Son. Yeah. Yep.
So I thought it was
interesting. Oh, you got another thing here?
You just said that the Father is self-personalized.
Self-personalized
right
deity.
Before that, you said the Upholder is self-extending.
The Infinite Upholder is extended by the infinite capacity. The infinite capacity extends the infinite upholder into here.
The infinite capacity is self.
It's self-projected deity. Yeah. See, so it not only can be the extender, you know, like if you're going to function as extender, you grab one end and you drag it across. It's like, well, but what am I dragging it across? Well, see, it's dragging it across itself. I'm going to project out, and then I'm going to extend the infinite holder across what I projected. I'm going to do it, and I'm going to make the place for to do it. I'm self-projected deity. I'm the infinite capacity.
So the infinite capacity is basically the unqualified absolute.
Right. From an individuality viewpoint, it's the unqualified absolute. But from a unity viewpoint, it's the infinite capacity.
Okay.
Well,
do you have anything to
draw from? Yeah. We don't want to get off too deep in the woods. Okay. We'll get all that stuff, you know, more as we go along.
Now, you called the Universal Father the individuality name. What was the unity name? God the Father?
Right. If you want to just sort of have two names, unity, God the Father, individuality, Universal Father, to start with. You know, when you want to get more complicated, you know, you can use, I can use the Universal Controller as an individuality name like I did here. Too, if I want to talk about the impersonal controller side and stuff, but you know, just to start out, like he said, keep it simple. Just take two words, a unity viewpoint word and an individuality viewpoint word, God the Father and Universal Father. That gets you started, and then build from there. Okay, so what else you got?
The term God always denotes personality. Deity may or may not refer to divinity personalities.
Like the Paradise Trinity is not personalized deity. The Paradise Trinity is just deity. Not only is it not personalized, it's non-personalizable. It can't be personalized. So, you know, you can't even call it pre-personal or something like that. I mean, it's non-personalizable deity. It's just deity. The Paradise Trinity.
It's called God.
No. Paradise Trinity is not God. It is deity.
The word God is used in these papers with the following meanings. 1. God the Father, creator, controller, and upholder. The universal Father, the first person of deity.
Okay, so just, you know, even though we just did it, just, you know, look at what he's doing there. He, you know, he hasn't told you. Now, refer to the infinite eternal ellipse, but you see, you know, that's what he's doing. That's what he has in his head when he's saying that. You know, he's just, you know, he's rattling off, you know, the universal creator, the universal controller, the infinite upholder. Those are three other facets that go into making the Father type deity, along with the universal Father. You know, and then he kind of alludes to, like when he says first person of deity, you know, it's the first source and the first center are also facets in there. Okay. And just, you know, in this context of talking about personality, the Universal Father has the personality circuit that you're encircuited in, and he bestows personality. But this thing he's bestowing, you know, as the Universal Father, where does he get it from? He has to draw that out of a reservoir. Personality is individuated will. There has to be a reservoir of will that he takes a measure out of. All the reservoirs have the word infinite as their adjective. You know, so if you look around the Father's, the circuit of the Father, there's two reservoirs. There's the infinite one and the infinite upholder. This is the reservoir of all will. The infinite one is the reservoir of all will. He dips a ladle into that reservoir, makes an individuated measure of will. The infinite one is a reservoir, and then bestows it. Okay, the other reservoir, the infinite upholder, that's, you know, like we were pointing out here. You know, you take a measure out of that reservoir, the infinite upholder reservoir, and you've got a thought adjuster, for instance. Yeah. He has two reservoirs he draws from, one to make personality, individuated will, and one to make father fragments. He bestows two things because that's all he can bestow. He has two reservoirs. Okay. Everything else is universal, universal, universal. You know, universal. There's two reservoirs. Okay, so that's the Father. We've gone around on that one several times, literally around. Actually, I should just keep this up because we're going to go through one at a time here. Okay, so go ahead and read the next one.
2, God the Son, coordinate creator, spirit controller, and spiritual administrator. Yes. The eternal Son, the second person of deity.
Okay, so God the Son. Okay, the Son is the type of deity. Oh yeah, right there it is. There's that facet of deity. There's the Son type deity. Doesn't go all the way around. It's just in this one little box. That's the Son type deity. You personalize that type of deity, you have God the Son. Yeah. Now, so from the unity, if you want to, you know, if you're thinking about that second person from the unity viewpoint, you call him God the Son. If you think about him from the individuality viewpoint, you know, go out to the individuality circuit here, you call him the Eternal Son, just like they said there, the Eternal Son. Okay, so unity name is God the Son, individuality name, the Eternal Son. Okay. There's some other names they toss in there, just one in passing, calling him the coordinate creator is really calling him her. Technically, the coordinate, when you say coordinate creator, you're talking about the eternal mother son. You're talking about, the eternal son is just pure existential deity, but there's, way back in the beginning, there was that experience that that the infinite spirit and the eternal son had in Havona. They added some experiential deity to their existential starting point, and they became also, if you want to think about them with that experiential part, they're the eternal mother son and the infinite mother spirit. Okay, and so, like, for instance, when you're talking about the two of them, if you want to talk about it technically, giving rise to a creator son, that's actually the Father functioning as the universal creator, technically, and the second person functioning as the coordinate creator, the eternal mother son. So it's father, mother in that sense of a creator son. Universal creator, coordinate creator, giving rise to a creator son. So that's one of the places where you use that coordinate creator label if you want to be specific about what exactly the second person of deity is up to. Okay, how about the next one?
3, God the Spirit, conjoined actor, universal integrator, and mind bestower. The infinite spirit, the third person of deity.
Okay, so very similar. There's the facet of deity. There's the spirit. You personalize that deity, God the Spirit. And if you want to talk about it from the individuality viewpoint, that's the infinite spirit.
I don't understand the individuality.
It's just whether or not... It's whether or not you want to think about there's God. There's one God, but has facets. And this facet's called God the Father, and this facet's called God the Son, and this facet's called God the Spirit, etc. So one God, many faces. Those are the face names. God the Spirit is the name of that face of God, the one God. It's the unity viewpoint, so it's all one. So the only remember I said last week, you need to immediately have an analogy. If the fundamental characteristic of deity is unity, and I'm going to have different, you know, names here instead of just one name, I've got to have something that has both separateness but unity in my analogy. So if I think of a crystal, one crystal with many faces, many facets, that's a good analogy. It's one God, but many faces of God. That's the unity viewpoint. Individuality viewpoint is when you say, okay, I want to think about it more kind of like I'm used to thinking about it, like I'm an individual, I'm not a facet of a crystal, you know, I'm an individual, I can draw a box around me. How do I think about like God the Father from my individual viewpoint, where he's right there? Like if I go to paradise and I'm standing in front of, I want to stand in front of an individual and worship him. I don't want to somehow be standing in front of an infinite facet that, I mean, I want him to be right there. I want to be able to point at him, look right at him and worship him. Okay. From an individuality viewpoint, that's the universal Father. When I think about him that way, you know, in other words, I take the faces and I just say, poof, all the rest of the faces I'm not going to look at right now. I'm just going to focus on this one individual facet and I'm going to just see it as if it was separate. Now I know technically it's not. I know it's, but I can, as an individual, I can engage it individually. That's one of the gifts God, you see, the Father made me an individual. My personality is absolutely individuated from unity. So I ought to be able to do that. I ought to be able to just look at the universal Father, okay, as an individual. And you can. Yeah.
So you said the Son was the
Okay. Yeah, God the Son, unity. The unity is always God the whatever. That's the unity viewpoint. It's the deity viewpoint. And then there's some other name that they use when they're talking about individuality, like the Eternal Son or Universal Father. Okay, just a couple little things in passing, besides this, you know, this obvious thing of, you know, of talking about, well, there's the deity, you personalize it, it's God the Spirit, individuality, it's the infinite spirit. With the third person of deity, it starts to get a little bit more complicated because there's an impersonal and a personal side. And if you want to really distinguish that, the personal side, the actor side, is the conjoint actor. If you want to really distinguish here, you want to talk about it really in that personal mode, it's the conjoint actor. The impersonal is the infinite spirit. It's like, well, that feels kind of, I don't know if I want to call the infinite spirit impersonal. Well, that's a starting way to think about it. Think about it impersonal. Now, technically, what those two sides are, the word personality is starting to break down a little bit here because, see, the third person of deity, you start with the first source and center, and then you bring the eternal Son and the I all into existence. They're very definitively spirit and energy separate. But the third source and center is, you create two relationships that come together. There's a personal side, the Father through the Son going to the conjoint actor, and then there's the universal controller going through the aisle to the infinite spirit. And the two are together. I mean, if you want to use, you want to speak about it technically, you have to call this the conjoint actor conjoint personality, and you have to call the infinite spirit conjoint pattern. You want to speak about it very technically. In other words, pattern and personality words are kind of breaking down. There's really kind of a little bit of both, you know. Or even another way to think about it, the infinite spirit, there's an adjective of infinite there. That's a reservoir in some way. And one of the things that it's a reservoir of is third source personalities. You know, third source personality comes out of that reservoir called the infinite spirit. Okay, and a third source personality is a different type of thing. Many third source personalities are pretty different than you and I. So it's almost like, it's almost like they're kind of like a person, but not quite. Yes, it's that, it's more this conjoint pattern thing. The one example of a third source personality that can engage you in a way that seems very definitively first source personality-like is the creative mother spirit. Creative mother spirit is a third source personality, but she's a very special type of third source personality. A third source personality that can engage you as a first source personality, just like a like she was a first source personality. She has to be that way because she has to be our mother. We have to, she has to be the individuality of the whole. As first source personalities, we have to all be able to link ourselves together through her. Well, if she was totally different than us, we couldn't link ourselves through her. You know? So she's this third source personality that, see, that's why she can do what she can do. Why she can connect you as a first source personality, but not just in the rest of the universe disappears. She can connect every first source personality at the same time. And so we can connect through her. That's because she's a third source personality that has this special characteristic of being able to engage first source. That's why she can do what she can do. Okay. So, but anyway, if you want to, at times you want to kind of distinguish. See, so like when you're talking about God the Sevenfold, the Sevenfold Creator is called the Conjoint Actor. The Sevenfold Controller is called the Infinite Spirit. See, that's when you're distinguishing personal, impersonal. Just like you have the Eternal Son on the one side and the Isle of Paradise on the other side. That's the way they're using the language to clarify. And of course, the Spirit is the mind bestower. Because you could call the conjoint actor the absolute mind, capital A, capital M. All right, how about the next one?
Four. God the Supreme, the actualizing or evolving God of time and space, personal deity associatively realizing the time-space experiential achievement of creature-creator identity. The Supreme Being is personally experiencing the achievement of deity unity as the evolving and experiential God of the evolutionary creatures of time and space.
Okay, so first things first, just the same way again. There is the facet of deity called the Supreme. You personalize that deity, that's called God the Supreme. Now, like we went through back when we were going through those divinity expressions, when you're talking about God the Supreme, there's some complexities. It's like, well, it's God the Supreme when I look at the top side of the Supreme level, but if I flip it around and look at the bottom side, the total finite side, then I have God the Mother and God the Almighty. And that's why it's the actualizing or evolving God of time and space, personal deity, God the Mother, associatively realizing, in association with God the Almighty, associatively realizing, see, the time-space experiential achievement. That's what they're alluding to there. The fact that there's this association, or if you think about it from the individuality, using the individuality names, see, like they point to when they say the Supreme Being. Okay, so let's talk about it with the individuality words. I have the Supreme Being on the top side, and I have the Universal Mother and the Almighty Supreme on the bottom side. Okay, the super additive consequence of the relationship between the Universal Mother and the Almighty Supreme is the Supreme Being. Okay, super additive. It's above. Now, the prefix super means above. See, you can think about it very literally. These two are on the bottom side, and the Supreme Being's on the top, above. The super additive consequence of the relationship between those two is the top side, okay? But there's no separation. again, you know. So it all just, you know, you can talk about it as the Supreme Being or the Universal Mother. You know, it just depends on what you want to focus on. You know, you want to talk about, you know, from the top-down viewpoint, you know, or do you want to be real specific? It's like, well, when you take the Supreme Being and his personal purposive part really starts to poke down into finite space and time, well, that personal purpose expression is called the Universal Mother. He becomes she when you translate across the boundary here. Or if you want to talk about the power pattern, he becomes it. The Supreme Being is expressed as the Almighty Supreme. So he is expressed as it and she. But it and she are perfectly coordinated. Because from a top-down viewpoint, that's where they, you know, how could they not be coordinated? They're one thing and they're expressed in twofold fashion. Yeah. Or from the bottom-up point of view, the super additive consequence of the relationship of the two is this. It means they're intimately connected. It all just depends on what you want to focus on.
You made it a cuss word. Thank you.
All right, go ahead and read the next one.
5. God the Sevenfold. Deity personality anywhere actually functioning in time and space. The personal paradise deities and their creative associates functioning in and beyond the borders of the central universe in power personalizing as the Supreme Being and the first creature level of unifying deity revelation in time and space. This deity, the grand
this level,
the grand universe, is the sphere of the time-space descension of paradise personalities in reciprocal association with the time-space ascension of evolutionary creatures.
Okay, again, just start with the simple part. There is a facet of deity called the sevenfold. You personalize that facet of deity, that's God the sevenfold. Okay, so from a unity viewpoint, it's very simple. It's just like all the other ones. You know, the individuality viewpoint is very complex. You know, like that's what's going on here. From the individuality viewpoint, you've got all these different individual names, you know, and most of them are not single. I mean, there's a countless number of master physical controllers, you know, countless gazillions of master physical controllers, okay? From an individuality viewpoint, there are many, very, very many, okay? But, you know, especially when you're talking about this personal expression over here as the creators, they're God. You know, master sons, creator sons are God. Ancients of days are God. Master spirits are God. Okay. Now, you know, and notice, you know, and this is where it gets even a little bit more complex. You've got the supreme creators, these three down here, and you've got, you know, the infinite creators, you know, expressed on a sub-infinite level, but you've got them here, you know, like they mentioned, you got those two sets of three, how did they word it, the paradise deities and their creative associates. So you have the paradise deities, the three on the top, their creative associates, the three on the bottom, and then in between, you've got the Supreme Being. Okay, and again, you want to think about this very carefully, because notice the first thing they did is contrast God the Supreme with God the Sevenfold. See, God the Sevenfold, they said, deity personality anywhere actually functioning in time and space. Okay? I mean, even at the level of the total finite, it's like, well, I'm not really down in. I'm wrapped, you know, I'm with the crust wrapping around the finite. You know, if I actually penetrate down into the finite, okay, then I'm talking about God the sevenfold. And so the Supreme Being is down in a very indirect way, because we already know that the Supreme Being is really that absonite individual word. You know, when I want to talk about the absonite individuality of God the Supreme. When we went through the Supreme Papers, we touched on this a little briefly. In terms of the Supreme Being actually being down in time and space, he personally is not. but his presence is. And the way that works, just like I said, the conjoint actor, you could call the absolute mind, capital A, capital M. You could call the supreme being the supreme mind, capital S, capital M. So as the supreme mind, there's a cosmic presence of the supreme mind. It's called reflectivity. That cosmic presence of the supreme mind, reflectivity. But again, it's not a direct presence even of the supreme being as the supreme mind. That presence is focalized through Majestan. Remember when we mentioned Majestan, we were going to the supreme. See, so even in that regard, even when you have this cosmic presence of the supreme mind called reflectivity, it's not direct. It goes through Majestan to become a cosmic presence. So, you know, you have to really think about how, at this point from in the finite age, the supreme being is a very tenuous point in this whole structure here. If you imagine trying to have something come down this sevenfold creator side, it's like, look, it seems like there's a gap there that's going to have a hard time getting through. And I brought that up when we first mentioned this. It's the key is that it's not just this. The key is you have the sevenfold controllers are an intimate part of the totality of God, the sevenfold. And the Almighty Supreme is very much down in here. Remember, the Almighty Supreme comes into existence as all the supreme creators, and there as they act in relationship to the supreme controllers, that totality is reflected as the Almighty Supreme. So the Almighty Supreme is down in there as the relationship between the supreme creators and the supreme controllers. Or another way to think about it, you know, if you want to get down and you can't get down that way, well, go over to the universal controller and then you can get down and then you can get over. And that's technically how it really is linked. If this universal controller here, see, is in there with the sevenfold. So any time that you might think, well, wait a minute, isn't the supreme, the fact that the supreme being isn't fully completed, doesn't that like kind of make a break point in trying to cross here? Well, if you want to think about it that way and you can't cross there because the supreme being is in your, you know, there's a gap there, well, cross here. Cross, that's all there. The Father's all there. The universal controller is all there. And through that link, I can get down into the sevenfold. I go down through the controller side. Not to belabor that, but, you know, especially because it's kind of abstract and out of context. But we actually had a context when we were going through the Supreme Papers where we couldn't quite understand what was going on. And I said, well, you got to remember, you can get down through the controller side. That's often an important thing to remember, that those two, the creator and the controller, are intimately connected together in a harmony. Okay, so God the Sevenfold, you know, is one of the things that's going to be talked about, and that's really complicated. Now, but from a unity viewpoint, it's just as simple as every other one. There's one facet of deity, you personalize it, it's God the Sevenfold. Okay. All right, so...
6, God the Ultimate. The eventuating God of super time and transcendent space. The second experiential level of unifying deity manifestation. God the Ultimate implies the attained realization of the synthesized, absonite, superpersonal, time-space transcendent, and eventuated experiential values coordinated on final creative levels of deity reality.
Okay. Well, again, just as a first blush, there's one facet of deity called the Ultimate. You personalize that deity, that's God the Ultimate. Okay. So it's that simple from a unity viewpoint. All those very complicated words there are trying to get you to begin to think about something that's beyond your horizon. There's a reason why when I created this chart, I made these two dividing lines horizontal. Okay? Because we're in the fifth functional level here, the evolutional level. Here's where we are as creatures. This is where creature identified deity, the sevenfold, identifies with us. We're here. We're in this range where it looks like, from our limited viewpoint, it's pretty much just a linear thing. You know, it goes to eternity that way, and maybe I'm kind of looking back to infinity this way, but it all seems kind of linear. If I start to really expand my ability to conceive of things, I can begin to stretch my viewpoint back to this horizon. Yeah, you know, like turn it over and think of it this way. You know, if I'm standing here and I'm looking this way, that's my horizon. Okay? And the farthest thing I can see there is the Universal Father. I can't really directly see beyond the Universal Father to the first source and the first center. Same way here. If I look towards eternity and try to expand my notion of the finite to its horizon, you know, I just get to there. The ultimate is beyond the horizon. All those words are trying to get you to think about, well, begin to imagine how you would talk about what's beyond that horizon. That's the ultimate. Okay? So that's why it's the chart is made this way, because these are very much the horizon lines of conception. And this whole part, this whole half of the infinite eternal ellipse is just very much completely beyond anything that any human has ever imagined. It's revealed to us for the first time, this other half. Human, you know, you can dig through human thought and you can find, like a lot of the non-personal thinkers who have penetrated this way to that horizon, and you can find the personal thinkers who've penetrated this way to this horizon, but no one has ever even imagined all this. Okay? It's beyond the horizon. It has to be revealed. We can't see it.
There was nobody, no source on that.
Everything there, you know, is beyond. You know, to the best of their abilities, they've used words to describe that stuff that we can relate to. You know, they didn't call it just some bizarre name that doesn't mean anything. But just recognize that that's really, really revelatory, that other half of the ellipse, is it's beyond your conception horizon in either direction. Either looking to infinity or looking to eternity, it's beyond the horizon. Okay?
Chris?
Yep.
That's the only real source that they used. Our text was Hartshorn, right? In that first few pages of the foreword, I think. Isn't
well, yeah, I mean, obviously a lot, yeah. You know, like, you know, try to dig through human records and find someone who's used the phrase God the Sevenfold. Right. You know, you can find people calling some things the Supreme Being, and if you look at it, it's like, well, you know, they actually kind of had the notion there. You know, they called the Supreme Being the Oversoul, and that, yeah, the Supreme Being, yeah, you can think of the Supreme Being as the Oversoul. Yeah. No. So, I mean, but, you know, God the Sevenfold, I mean, the fact of God the Sevenfold, you know, and Frandalanx, and, you know, and I mean, that is so beyond anything that anyone's ever even remotely imagined, you know. Yeah.
First source and center, is that not?
Well, sure, there's words, but not the fact of them, okay. You know. I mean, any more than, you know, we call God the Ancient of Days. That doesn't mean that anyone ever thought of the ancients of days, the super universe administrators, you know. But we had that word, and like we read, they have to use words if we've got them, and that works really well for those beings. You know, you can very aptly call them the ancients of days. So if you go to paradise and you look at the finite personality records, the very first entries on the finite personality records are the ancients of days. They're the first finite beings on the list, the ancients of days. So you don't get much more ancient than the first ones. Okay, now the last one.
7, God the Absolute. The experientializing God of transcendent super personal values and divinity meanings. Now existential as the deity absolute. This is the third level of unifying deity expression and expansion. On this super creative level, deity experiences exhaustion of personality potential.
Of personalizable potential.
Personalizable potential, thank you. Encounters completion of divinity and undergoes depletion of capacity for self-revelation to successive and progressive levels of other personalization. Deity now encounters, impinges upon, and experiences identity with the unqualified absolute.
Okay, now I know everyone's brains are about to explode. Okay, but we've got to do just one more. Of course, it's the biggest one. Let's just wade through this a little bit, this last one. So let's just try to put together a couple of the pieces of God the Absolute so that it's not so abstract. Remember what I said last week when I was reading through effort, you know, and they brought up the Absolute, and I was reflecting to myself, oh yeah, the Absolute, that gets really complicated. Let's use the chart just to help, because you got everything laid out so you can point to this stuff and it isn't so abstract. But the thing you notice here, see, is you're going along and you got the supreme, the ultimate, and the next thing is not the absolute, it's the infinite. And then it's the absolute. And it's like, well, okay, that's already complicated. Why in the heck weren't those in the reverse order? Let's start with the first thing. Just as a unit viewpoint, there's the absolute deity. You personalize it, it's got the absolute. Okay, so that's straightforward. But notice how it says, now existential as the deity absolute. Okay, see, in that second functional level, the total deity, so there's the deity absolute. Now, why are they saying now existential as? Okay. The basic time viewpoint of the absolute, so the three absolutes, you have the deity absolute, the unqualified absolute, and the universal absolute. You have those three absolutes. And from a time viewpoint, you say, one must be, all three of them are reservoirs. So one of them must be the reservoir for material substance, and one must be the reservoir for spirit substance. Yeah, there's the reservoir for material substance. And nice and parallel, flipped over to the other side here, here's the deity absolute, the reservoir for spirit substance. So from this time viewpoint, I have these two. And then the reservoir for mindal energy, mind is what links spirit and matter together. So from a time viewpoint, I say, well, if this thing exists, and they're just pointing out, yeah, this thing exists, and notice it exists in the level here where the deity facet called the absolute is, okay? This thing exists, and this thing exists. The deity absolute and the unqualified absolute exist, and so the super additive consequence of the relationship between the two is the universal absolute. And I think of that as the reservoir for mind energy. That's the time viewpoint. The time viewpoint is pretty limited if you want to actually think about God the Absolute. All it can really get you is, you can say, well, if I imagined taking these three absolutes and putting them together as one thing, if I took the deity absolute, the unqualified absolute, and the universal absolute, and I put them all together as one thing, I could call that one thing the absolute. Okay. Oh, yeah, and it goes right here. So it's in this level where, it's most directly existential right now is the deity absolute, because that's in the same level as it. Okay, that's the basics of what they're saying there. Let's just take it one more notch up. Let's look at it from the eternity viewpoint. We can do that now very straightforwardly. Let's use the infinite eternal ellipse to really see it from the eternity viewpoint instead of the time viewpoint. So instead of seeing it as as the super additive consequence of the relationship between that and that being that, you know, the deity absolute and the unqualified absolute being the universal absolute. Let's, you know, here we are. Let's just put ourselves in the eternity viewpoint. Let's look around the thing. See, as you look around the ellipse this way, you're looking towards eternity. As you look around this way, you're looking towards infinity. So if I'm here and I start looking, and I look towards eternity and take the eternity viewpoint, the first thing I see is the universal absolute. Yeah. Not one of those two. Okay, so now before we go any further, let's again think about what when we talked about total deity, we talked a bit about the unity viewpoint of the beginning of all things, where total will separated from total deity. That beginning point where, you know, that whole bit about freeing himself from the fetters of unqualified infinity, total will, the infinite one, separating from total deity. Well, look at how you can kind of, I mean, and we talked about how you can think about the deity absolute as being very tightly related to, you know, that total deity we were separating from. Think about that right, just right here. So here is the infinite one separated from the deity absolute. Okay, there's a separation there. They're in different boxes. Okay, now the infinite one is part of the Father. Lastly, the infinite upholder. So that, as much as that's separated from the deity absolute, the other end of the Father, the infinite upholder, that's also separated from the deity absolute. And look at how you can view that separation directly. See, go to the individuality viewpoint. There is the infinite upholder. And what does its separation from the deity absolute look like? Well, it's a gap between there and there around the ellipse. From the unity viewpoint, you have this gap between the infinite upholder and the deity absolute. That's the separation. Instead of the separation being this, the separation is between the universal absolute and the deity absolute. And the super additive consequence of the relationship between the universal absolute and the deity absolute is the unqualified absolute. The super additive relationship, see, is different now from the unity viewpoint. From the unity viewpoint, the deity viewpoint, this makes sense. Because when you talk about these three absolutes, two of them are called deity absolutes and one's called a non-deity absolute. Obviously, the deity absolute must be a deity absolute. Okay. The other deity absolute is the universal absolute. So from the unity viewpoint, the deity viewpoint, the relationship would be between the two deity absolutes. Yeah. And the super additive consequence of the relationship between those two deity absolutes is the non-deity absolute. Okay. This is actually what they're pointing out at the end there. So think about from this eternity viewpoint, where, you know, if the word personality is going to be somehow attached to deity, okay, personalized deity. Okay, well, I'm imagining taking this to supremacy and ultimacy and beyond. I'm trying to push this as far as I can imagine, taking this personalizing thing. Well, at some point, deity experiences exhaustion of personalizable potential. At some point, I'm going to exhaust everything that I've got here in the deity absolutes. Okay? See, and so, you know, and it's, you know, even beyond other personalization, like super personalization or any other word that you might coin, you're going to just go beyond all that. See, at that point, deity now encounters, impinges upon, and experiences identity with something that's above the deity absolutes. The super additive consequence of the relationship between those two deity absolutes, above it is the non-deity absolute. See? Identity with the unqualified absolute. At that point, it transcends even what you would call deity and brings non-deity and deity back together again. At that point, see, I've reached kind of the way I started. In the beginning was the I am.
That's what I was thinking when I was reading that.
See? That, See, you can't really understand what they're saying there from the time viewpoint. That's the challenge to be, because if it's somehow running out of gas and then having to go up to the unqualified, somehow the unqualified has to be a super additive consequence. It's like, well, every time in the book when they're talking from my individuality viewpoint about the absolutes, the super additive consequence is the universal. It's the one that, you know, it's like, well, there's some distortion there. Imagine going to such an intense level of bringing everything all together again. I'm going to be really going beyond the validity of the individuality viewpoint. I've got to let myself see things from the eternity viewpoint. I've got to be able to, I've got to have some way to visualize that. I can in the infinite eternal ellipse. Because I know that this gap is that gap. Yeah. You know, and like we pointed out last time, see, all of this is happening. How does this gap bridge? You know, the Father made this gap. He separated him. He freed himself from the fetters of unqualified infinity. How does the gap get bridged? Well, it can't get bridged through him. He made the gap. He's sustaining the gap. He's the gapizer. Okay? Okay? How does this gap get bridged? The Paradise Trinity. That thing that's non-personalizable, that's fundamentally transcendent of personalizable deity. That's what allows this gap to be bridged. See, when the Father separated, it allowed one, this one face, this omnipersonal face of the Universal One and Infinity, the first center, to be on his side. But then there's the other side of the Universal One and Infinity. And it's the key to rebridging this gap. But bridging it in a deity way only, not in a personality way. Because he freed himself from the fetters of unqualified infinity. So a gap can't be bridged in a personal way, a he-ness way. It has to be bridged to the Paradise Trinity. That's how you get from this side to this side. It's like, oh, wow, now it really makes sense why this is not here. Why there's something, the stasis of deity is in between. See? So that's the kind of thinking, you know, that you can do now. And it's, if you didn't have this, that would all be just hopelessly inscrutable. But you can just point to it. It's like, it's not hard. It's like, I've got to go through there to get to here. You know, and what's here? Paradise Trinity's here. That's how it's done. Okay? So now you should be starting to see why we introduced this before we started this. It allows us to really begin to transform our relationship to this. It isn't just a bunch of words, you know. We can point right to it. We know where these things are. We can see their relationship to other things. We've got all the deity, total deity laid out. And it's not just the knowledge that's in the book. All the knowledge is in the book. This is the coordination of that essential knowledge. Remember, they made the suggestion. We suggest that if you want to think about this, coordinate it. And use an ellipse to coordinate it. We're going to give you all the pieces, now just put it together. Yeah. And as soon as you do, you can take something that you think, well, there's no way I can think about that last sentence in any direct way. Yes, you can. It's not that hard at all. Once you have more than just your anthropomorphic individuality viewpoint, you can do it. And of course, you see, this is the thing. You know, we're talking about going beyond eternity to the endless cycles of eternity. We're talking about letting go of the time viewpoint. We're talking about just seeing ourselves in this eternal relationship to everything. Yeah. You know, the ultimate is already here. Even though I'm only experiencing here, the ultimate's already here. The absolute's already here. It's all there. You're just beginning to experience into this full picture. Yeah. And just as we go into the reflection, into our reflection time, you know, just, you know, reflect on doing that, letting go, you know, as much as you can, and starting to just see, begin to see yourself in this domain. Like he said when we started, you know, all that rationalization and symbolization you've been doing, I mean, even at its best, it can only go to these two horizon lines, and it's just not going to get it done. If you want to talk about God, you have to have logic, a logical insight. You have to have an insight into the infinite eternal reality. You can't just go on sight, no matter how advanced your rationalization ability is. No one can go beyond those horizon lines with pure sight. You have to have insight into the part that you can't see so that you can see the whole picture. All right, let's take a moment and reflect on that.